Patel, Miss Roy.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. This is Sharmila Roy, appearing for Christian Peters. I'd like to save 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal, if I may. Your Honor, without conceding on any of the issues we have mentioned in our opening brief, in the interest of saving time, I'd like to focus on three issues that we have in our brief. First, we'd like to argue that Christian Peters did establish a prima facie case of retaliatory discharge, and he also did introduce evidence of pretext. And under the standard set in Reeves versus Sanderson Plumbing Products, that's all you need for the plaintiff to be able to survive summary judgment. We believe the district court here did not follow the standard set in Reeves in granting summary judgment to the defendant. But more than that, the district court didn't even follow the pre-Reeves standard insofar that he made inferences not in favor of Mr. Peters, took disputed facts and took them to be the true facts. And this is not something that a district court should do on summary judgment. First, the prima facie case. The only things to contention here are whether Peters was legitimately performing according to the employer's expectations. Yes, there were disciplinary impositions against him, but we are contending that they were, in fact, discriminatory. And so, of course, any time an employer discriminatorily imposes discipline, you are going to not be able to prove that they were meeting legitimate expectations. Moreover, we believe that the Reeves standard, the right standard, is that simply that he was qualified for the job, and that it would be mixing up the pretext question with the prima facie question to argue that because he was disciplined, even though allegedly discriminatorily, that therefore he could not establish a prima facie case, because then he doesn't get an opportunity to establish pretext. As far as the comparator was concerned, there were two people in the national sales office on that night. One person was discharged for several reasons. He had no authority to be there. He was actually there without authority. He did access the internet on the computer. So these are different reasons for which my client was discharged, which was falsification of the law. There's evidence in the record to show that many Caucasian loss prevention officers were not disciplined, let alone not discharged, for similarly falsifying their logs. So the comparator, the right comparator, are those people who were eating and saying they were in the lobby, or they didn't call in sick and at the right time, and their logs were changed to show that they did come in. One was on the phone when she was supposed to be somewhere else, and these falsifications apparently didn't incur the wrath of the employer, but only the fact that Mr. Peters, who thought he was legitimately in the national sales office helping Williamson look for computer sales, a computer software, only he was disciplined, and he was in fact discharged for falsifying the log. So the right, if you look at the right comparators here, there are Caucasian LPOs who were not disciplined in any way for falsifying their logbooks. In fact, Mr. Bauman, who is the supervisor, actually himself helped in falsifying some of these logbooks. So given these facts, it would seem that Mr. Peters has established a prima facie case. He has established that he's African-American. He has established that he was performing according to the expectations of the employer. Until February 1997, he was performing well. He got a good review. He even got commendations from the management. He was voted best LPO by two of his fellow employees. But in February 1997, after he got a couple of disciplinary impositions, he was still voted he was still voted by the management to be a good employee. It's only when he complained to Mr. Stewart Moore about the way they treated their African-American guests and employees that suddenly he was considered not to be meeting the legitimate expectations. As far as the summary judgment standard in Reeves, the district court didn't cite Reeves at all. Reeves, according to me, merely clarified the standard for summary judgment. It didn't do anything new. It merely said that as long as the jury under St. Mary's Honor Center can find for the defendant, summary judgment should not be granted. But to the extent that Reeves actually held that, the district court went against those standards. Mr. Peters showed that he was retaliatory, at least established a prima facie case, established some evidence of pretext, and taken together, the jury should get a chance to hear what exactly happened. Why did Mr. Bauman never say that, yes, he knew that there was a computer project going on? He knew that Williamson was permitted to look for software in the National Sales Office. The jury should be permitted to find out what the real story is. Also, the termination certificate just said that Mr. Peters was terminated for falsifying his logbook. Now they say he was also terminated for being in the National Sales Office, which is not what they said before. To change the story is some evidence of pretext. To treat competitors differently, Caucasian competitors, is some evidence of pretext. So given this evidence of pretext and the fact that he established a prima facie case, I would submit that Reeves clearly says he should survive summary judgment. And this court is respectfully requested to reverse the grant of summary judgment, remand this case for trial.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Roy. Ms. Snigelski?
If it will please the court, good morning. I listened with interest to what my opponent had to say, and I must respectfully do more than disagree with her. First, as far as these two individuals, Mr. Williamson and Mr. Peters, being terminated for different reasons, that is incorrect. If one examines their termination paperwork, one can see that not only were they told that they were both being terminated for being in the National Sales Office for no reason, no good reason, no bad reason, for 51 minutes after being caught on videotape, they were also told that they were both written up for violation of the same work rules, number 19, which is unauthorized use of hotel facilities. It is true that in addition to being in the National Sales Office with no good reason, and I should back up and explain to you the scenario here because I think it's very important. What happened in this case is that Mr. Peters and Mr. Williamson were both security guards for the Renaissance Chicago Hotel. They were charged with protecting the assets of the hotel, the safety of the hotel, the security of guests. On the night in question, at approximately 11:15, Mr. Peters and Mr. Williamson, and Mr. Peters on duty, Mr. Williamson was off duty, they are seen entering the National Sales Office, which is an out-of-the-way office of the hotel, and they spend 51 minutes in there goofing off. They're going through drawers, they're going through closets, they're going into a room where a postage machine was, and they're playing with a computer. My opponent has conceded that Mr. Williamson was indeed engaged in this misconduct and went on the internet when they were in there. Mr. Peters, who was on duty and was charged with preventing this very type of activity, watched it all happen. Now, we know that this all happened because it was captured on videotape. There was a videotape set up in that office because one of the employees who worked in that office noticed that there was unauthorized activity after hours. She was in charge of closing the office, shutting down computers, turning off the postage machine. She would come in the morning, and she would find her computer on. Somebody, not her, put an AOL icon on her computer desktop. The postage machine had been used. Postage was stolen from the hotel. There was food in the garbage can when she came in the morning. She contacted the director of loss prevention, who set up a video camera. And what this video camera captured was the appellant, Mr. Peters, and Mr. Williamson coming into this office for their 51 minutes. They were determined to be the people who engaged in this unauthorized activity. Now, Mr. Peters happened to be the one on duty. They therefore went, and management looked at his activity log, because as a security guard, he was required to maintain an activity log that showed where he was and what he was doing during the course of his shift. They wanted to know what the heck these guys were doing in this office. Mr. Peters' activity log did not show he was in the office at all. It showed that he was on the fourth floor, the third floor, the second floor, that he was in the hotel lobby, that he was in a Kinko's. Management was just appalled. They said they believed that this showed deceit. They couldn't believe it was their security guards in this room. Therefore, and they thought Mr. Peters' log was just used to disguise the presence of these two folks in the security or in the national sales office. So they called them both in. They determined they were both lying, and they terminated them both. Mr. Peters happens to be black. Mr. Williamson's happens to be white. This is the only appropriate comparator in this case. I think that our position on the prima facie case is set forth clearly in our brief, and I won't revisit that. I believe that this court can go directly to whether or not there is evidence of pretext. And I submit to you that Mr. Peters has not adduced any evidence whatsoever that this was not the true reason for his termination, that the hotel lied about the reason for his termination. What he is asking this court to do is to reach a different result based on the evidence before it. And this court has ruled that it will not sit as a super personnel department and revisit the non-discriminatory business judgment of the hotel. Now, Mr. Peters also says that this was a retaliatory discharge. He says this was because he had a meeting with Anthony Stewart Moore, the general manager of the hotel, approximately 2 months prior to his termination. He did indeed have such a meeting, but what Mr. Peters testified he talked to Mr. Stewart Moore about, and this meeting also included another African-American loss prevention officer, Mr. Cunell, who to this day remains employed by the hotel. What they talked about was an expression that they thought it was important to have diversity in the hotel, that they believed that it was important to have diversity in upper management ranks. Mr. Stewart Moore agreed with this. Even assuming that this is protected activity, or Mr. Peters said that there is problems with the treatment of African-American hotel guests, which I do not believe is supported by the record, there is absolutely no nexus whatsoever between that and Mr. Peters' termination. The other alleged falsifications that my opponent addressed, I submit to this court, first of all, that Mr. Peters has not shown that there were any other alleged falsifications. He has not brought forth a log from any other person and shown that somebody else was where they should not have been, doing something they should not have done in these such egregious circumstances. Moreover, assuming the things that Mr. Peters has brought forth are true, what he has shown is that there were corrections and errors. There was the exercise of management discretion. He has not shown that these things were reported to management or that they could be verified by management. He has not shown that the decision maker involved in his termination, Mr. Steve Keith, the Director of Human Resources, he has not shown that Mr. Keith was aware of any of these alleged falsifications. Moreover, what Mr. Peters conveniently omits is that he previously falsified records and he was not terminated for it. He is not able to show that he has found anyone who was engaged in something of a comparable degree of seriousness to him other than Mr. Williamson, who was not terminated. In addition, Mr. Peters has alleged in this case that he was subjected to a racially hostile work environment. There is simply no evidence that a reasonable or objective person could find Mr. Peters' work environment to be hostile. There is no harassment. The incidents and isolated episodes that Mr. Peters claims constitute a hostile environment are simply that, to the extent they are even supported by any admissible evidence. Most of it is pure speculation, and even by the way Mr. Peters set them out, are not things that he was even involved in or aware of during his employment. The things that he was involved in, for example, what he claims is the coins in the fountain episode, he claims that this is evidence of a hostile environment, that he was a security guard on duty, that there was another African-American security guard on duty, and there was a white security guard on duty, and that the white security guard was asked to guard the coins that were taken out of the wishing well fountain. Well, that person happened to be the senior officer on duty. What Mr. Peters doesn't say is there were other times when African-American guards were asked to guard the coins. This does not show anything. It does not show a racially hostile environment. and it is nothing more than an innocuous incident. And the other things that Mr. Peters has raised are similarly innocuous. No reasonable person could consider these things to be hostile, and there is no evidence that the terms and conditions of Mr. Peters' employment were affected by any of these alleged incidents, and certainly not because of his race. Mr. Peters has done nothing in this case to show that any action was taken against him on account of his race, much less his termination. He and Mr. Williamson, who was an employee with a longer term of employment with this hotel and who had no prior disciplinary history, was also terminated for this same episode. The court can also look at the reasons for Mr. Peters' termination and Mr. Williamson's termination, both on that paperwork, the termination paperwork, which was submitted and is attached to Mr. Peters' deposition and Mr. Williamson's deposition. It can also examine the record of the termination meeting itself, which is attached to the affidavit of Ms. Peterson, the Assistant Director of Human Resources, as well as Mr. Keith, the Director of Human Resources. And what that shows is that they were both counseled and told that they should not have been in that room doing those things. They had absolutely no business being in there, and that is why they were terminated. Mr. Peters, it says, terminated for falsification of records because he compounded his impermissible actions by lying about where he was. In conclusion, I would like to say that the decision of the district court in this case was correct. There are absolutely no genuine issues of material fact. Mr. Peters has utterly failed to meet his burden of showing that there is a genuine issue of material fact requiring a trial in this case, and the decision of the district court should be affirmed.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Miguel.
Thank you.
Roy, how much time do you have? 2 or 3 minutes?
Good morning, Your Honor. If I may, my name is Denise Murchison, and I also represent the appellant, Christian Peters. So I'd like to take a few minutes for the rebuttal. First of all, the court should realize, as everyone in the district, Northern District of Illinois should realize, that the district courts here are using the motions for summary judgment to lighten their dockets. It's very clear what the standard is for granting a motion for summary judgment. Renaissance had to establish that there is no genuine issue of disputed fact, but there are many disputed issues of fact, and I'd like to start with Mr. Peters' performance. Renaissance would like for you to believe that he was a poor performer and he was not performing his job at a satisfactory level when he was terminated. However, the record shows that he had received commendations, he had passed probationary period. Also, we need to compare his performance, or let me kind of cut to the quick. The real issue here is whether
they could retain a security guard after that 51-minute episode. That's kind of egregious behavior for a security guard.
But Your Honor, I am so glad that you brought that up, because I don't agree with Renaissance's description of what happened. Yes, Mr. Peters was in the National Sales Office, but he actually logged on the activity log that he was in that area. Therefore, he did not falsify the record. And there's absolutely no evidence that he was using the postage machine, that
he was
using the computer.
Then they asked him, was he in the record? He said no.
Your Honor, what Mr. Peters testified to in his deposition
was that he denied being in the office.
Well, what I'd like the court to look at is the evidence that Renaissance looked at, and that was his activity log. And his activity log showed
that they asked
that
him was he in it, and he said he wasn't there. Said his log was his activity log was correct. He had not been in the security in the sales office.
Your Honor, if that's what the record shows, that's what it shows. However, what I'm pointing the court toward, what we want the jury to look at, is what he put in his activity log, and that was that he was in that area, which is Kinko's.
Well, the difference between being in an area and being in a room. I mean, nobody say that I was in a lobby at the moment, although I'm in the area. Am I correct?
You're certainly not incorrect, Your Honor.
Okay.
However, what we need to compare is what were they terminated for? Williamson, who is white, and Peters, who is black, were terminated for two different things. He was terminated for falsifying records, and the records actually show that other whites who had committed similar acts were retained by Renaissance. I see that my time is up.
Thank you, Ms. Richardson.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to both sides. Next case.